She's April.
And she's Molly.
And we are
the Book Besties.
A secret guest. A super secret guest.
I'm your fucking family now.
Take it in one way or another, bitch!
Hunting for dick.
It's just exhausting and a long road and unnecessary.
I can't do metaphors when I'm high.
It's like, sometimes. It depends on the day and how they overlap.
You know that we started this conversation before we started the episode, so people have no idea what you're talking about.
It wasn't for them, it's for me and you. I have ADHD, and I have to finish my thought.
Do you want Tom to cut that out?
Or we I just don't know, just leave it. Leave it. Leave the ADHD. It's fine, Tom. I don't care if you don't care. Hi, besties! Do you like my shirt? I designed it for the local book club.
It's awesome.
They have all these like frilly and cute ones and roses and whatnot, but I'm not frilly and roses.
You needed a badass motherfucker?
Yeah, and you know what? A lot of the girls in our book club also needed a badass motherfucker.
Love
next,
that.
I want one with headphones that's doing an audiobook. That'd be really cute.
That'd be really cute. Well, I'm ready to do this because Tuesdays are like, we're filming on a Tuesday.
Happy Pod Day, guys!
Yeah.
Happy this Pod episode Day
is coming out on a Tuesday. We're filming.
You guys should be listening right now to How to Sell a Haunted House.
Well, they would have listened to that last week. Because
but you know what I mean? Like, while we're doing this, they're doing
that. They should be listening to Cocoa
right,
Weebly.
Because we're in the present, and we're talking about future them. Wibbly wobbly timey wimey, guys.
Future them should be listening to this episode, because right, this episode comes out in the future. Cocoa Weebly is now their past.
But it's our present.
Cocoa-wee-wee. Listen, I am concerned as to how tonight's gonna go, because Tuesdays are my long days, like not my long days, but they're like my hardest day at work. I come home from work and I go to Cub Scouts on Monday, and so I don't actually come home until like 9:30 on Mondays, right. And then Tuesday is just a really busy day at the library. It's our busiest day. And so I'm sore and I'm tired and I just started my period. Literally
went pee before. Oh, that was really nice of her to just come and join the party.
Yeah. I literally went to the bathroom, went pee, and then came up to my recording studio immediately after. And when I went to the bathroom, I was like, well, that explains it.
You want to hear the win in the Biggs house? Liv has been fever free for 48 hours.
Well, that's good. I'm glad she's feeling better.
My poor kid has mono and pneumonia.
That's not fun.
No. And she's like losing her mind about school. And the teacher's like, don't worry about it. Heal. And she's like, but it's the end of the quarter. I'm going to fail. And I'm like, you're not, baby.
Listen, let me just say, as an educator, the kids that are like Liv, that are like, I don't want to fail. What can I do to catch up? They're the kids that the teacher is going to be like, don't worry about it. I'll make sure your grade is cushy.
Literally,
and the kids that don't give a fuck, those are the kids that I'm like, psh, whatever.
Literally, Livia has 100 in one of her classes because her teacher just keeps putting done, complete. It's not even like grades. It's just complete.
Yeah, they can exempt them from the grades, too, like the overall grade.
Yeah, like her big thing right now is benchmarks that are here in the state. Mm-hmm. And like once the benchmark's done. Mm-hmm. And she's freaking out about not taking it. And I called like her counselor, and Ms. Himes is like, she's exempt. She has a valid reason.
I mean, she's legitimately sick. She's just not skipping school because she doesn't want to. No.
She's literally getting out of breath climbing the stairs.
Yeah, poor kid. All right, so let's talk about this week's book. We are going to talk about The Banned Bookshop of Maggie Banks. So this is our first post-spooky books. And I got to be honest with you, this was not the one to come out.
I was a little disappointed. I'm not going to lie.
No. So would you like a synopsis?
Please and thank you. Please sure. and thank you.
Maggie Banks has never truly found her life's passion. Cliche. She has bounced from job to job since graduating from UC Berkeley, and now she's living back with her parents. Cliche. When her best friend, Rochelle, enlists her help running Rochelle's bookstore while she's out on maternity leave, Maggie jumps at the opportunity to try something new. While Rochelle is a book lover, Maggie has never gotten the appeal, which means that she's awesome for this job. Perfect, mostly because actually. Her experience with reading has been exclusively to classics assigned in school. But in Belle River, home to the late author Edward Bell, she will discover there is much to enjoy about reading. Cobblestone Books is part of the Bell Society Holdings, run by Edward's grandson, Ralph. Ralph requires that all of Bell Society businesses only paint Edward Bell in a positive light, only sell books from his time period and foods mentioned in his books, and above all else, be useful. After dwindling sales, Maggie devises an idea to host parties for book lovers where a guest author writes a genre-ed interpretation of a classic novel. While the parties are a huge success, Maggie is having more and more difficulty hiding the evidence in falsified sales reports, lying to her best friend, and keeping secrets from the man she's dating, Malcolm, who also happens to be Ralph's snitch. Will Maggie be able to keep the bookshop afloat and convince Ralph that there is more to reading than just the books written by white men of a certain era? You're blurry. Do me a thing.
Better?
I don't know. Who knows this fucking platform?
Who fucking knows? Let me tell you what. This book. Let me tell you what. I will say one thing. I have a new thing on my bucket list because of this book. I want to be invited as a writer to do one of those revamps.
100%.
Will never get invited to participate in Miscast. I'll never get to be on Broadway stage, but I might get a chance to do something like that.
Hunting for Dick.
I loved that he went, you know, we'll talk about it. We'll talk.
All right. Maggie appears to be directionless. She hasn't been able to hold a job, a relationship, or a hobby. Do you find her likable as a character?
Maggie's me, guy.
No, she's not.
I have never had a direction. I've never had a true calling.
Not true.
I've bounced around. I've been flighty. I'm the flighty friend. You disagree?
You're not Maggie.
No. Really?
No, Molly, because as much as you have ADHD and you talk about being flighty, you set goals for yourself and you accomplish them. You join the Coast Guard, and you might have joined the Coast Guard because you felt directionless at the time, but you saw it through.
That's true.
You were in the Coast Guard. You didn't just bail after boot camp. You finished.
That's true.
You re-enlisted once at least?
I did eight and a half years. 9 years.
Okay, yeah. So you did 2 enlistments, and then while you were somebody who had started college and it didn't work out for you, you decided to go back to college because that was a life
several
goal
times.
For you.
But you did it, and
you have a degree.
Yeah, it took me over 10 years though.
It doesn't matter. That's not directionless. Maggie is the kind of character.
I would really like you to tell some of my family this.
Listen. The thing is that someone like Maggie, to me, is not likable because it isn't that she's directionless. It isn't that she doesn't have any idea what she wants to do with her life. It's that she doesn't try to figure out what she wants to do with her life.
She just kind of lets like, the wind takes her.
I'll do something else, whatever. She wants to do is throw parties. I only want to work in an office if I can throw parties.
Okay, obviously she's... should have been a party planner from the beginning.
That's the only career that falls under.
Like, I don't understand why, like, I know a lot of people that are creatives like this that bounce from job to job, but they focus on their creativity, right? Their creativity is their true passion, and they bounce from job to job to afford to be able to be the creative that they are. She literally has no passion.
None. And she obviously has to be intelligent because she went to Berkeley. That's not, no, like...
And it's a brush off. People at Berkeley talk about Berkeley, just like people from Harvard and Yale talk about Harvard and fucking Yale.
Right.
I went to Harvard. We fucking know.
And they don't say UC Berkeley. They said Berkeley. Because it needs to be specified that it's not University of California, Berkeley. It's Berkeley.
And, you know, and I mean, all universities do this. Talk to anybody about the Ohio State. You can't say Ohio State. You have to say
you.
The Ohio State.
You do. That's their fucking name. There's another Ohio University, so they have to be the Ohio State University.
New York State has all the SUNY schools, right? And if you mix up SUNY Cortland with SUNY Binghamton or SUNY Cornell or any of them, they lose their shits.
Look,
it's ridiculous.
All I'm saying is characters like her are not likable to me because people like her that I just am like, just find something to do with yourself.
Oh, I find connection with people like this.
You're not like that. I don't agree with you.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that.
I don't have friends who are. I don't have friends who are like
aimless.
There's a difference between having a break to find your passion and just not giving a fuck. And that's what Maggie.
Yeah. She just
the only
care.
Thing she cared about was that her parents looked down on her.
Yeah.
And but not enough to fucking fix it.
Right. And, you know, and she takes this woman. She is very much everybody hates me. Like,
and she straight lied to her best friend.
And her best friend lets it go.
And her best friend tells her the reason we are getting all this support is because of you. Because you're so likable. You make an army. Bitch, she spent the whole book lying to you about your business.
Well,
she falsified sales reports. People go to jail for shit like that.
That's a federal crime. It's a federal crime.
I don't know. Ready for the next one?
Yes, please.
Pretty quickly, we learn that Ralph has a tight hold on the Bell Society businesses. He single-handedly saved several local businesses by investing in them as a majority shareholder and then forces them to fall in line with his plans to make his grandfather, Edward Bell, the center of their business. What do you think of him as a foil to the other characters in the book?
He's not fully developed.
Hmm.
Does that make sense to you?
It does. It does, but I feel like he thinks he's fully developed.
Right, but the character has not been written.
Or do you mean like the... Oh, okay.
The character has not been written out fully developed. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, we have...
He's definitely a one note. He's stagnant.
Yes, he's very stagnant. And like, the whole villain storyline, it's... They're not leaning enough into the bad guy that owns the town thing enough. You know what I mean to say so? And they're not leaning enough away from it that you can see that he seesaws. Because he does seesaw at the end. So it's like,
yeah,
we needed, there was not.
I mean, he gives up his job pretty quickly for being the character that won in the stronghold on everything.
Well, and like, if he didn't care this much about his great-grandfather, and he was just doing it for the money, why didn't he just fucking sell it off when he had the chance?
Yeah.
Also, I mean,
we get a small glimpse of him having some like feelings where he says he didn't burn those letters because he just felt like he couldn't do that again. He couldn't contribute to that.
That just feels like a lame excuse for someone that said, oh, you caught my hidden stash. I was going to burn it, but I changed my mind.
Right.
It just, but
if
also,
he was going to do something about it, he should have released the information.
I Googled Edward Bell to see if there was like a person by this name, author. The only Edward Bell that is famous is Edward Robert Bell. Do you know who this is?
Mm-mm.
He is a murderer and a rapist.
Cool.
Old guy. Who this Bell was.
Probably should have picked a different name. I knew he wasn't a real author.
I still have to Google. I don't have a freaking card catalog in my brain like you, babe.
Well, I mean, literally, because
they
I'm
install
a librarian.
It when you get your
it comes with your
degree,
diploma.
Right? Yeah, I thought so.
Now, they used to give you a physical card catalog implanted in you, but right. they don't do that anymore. Right. Now, they add a chip
right.
that and downloads the information to your brain. And
they scan it every few years, right, just to update right. it.
We got
to
keep it updated.
Right, right, right. Absolutely. Right. That's what those mm-hmm. library conferences are. Aren't really yep. conferences.
Once they're a year, just, we got to get our brains updated.
Updating the programming in the librarians.
Mm-hmm. When we talk about professional development, it's just uploading new information to our microchips.
That's what your kids' teachers are doing. Is they're just downloading grades from their brain into the computer while they're not. Yeah.
It's possible that that's what my youngest son's teacher actually is doing. Her grades don't make no sense.
Damn, Skippy. That's from my Sammy's teacher. Because he's my Sammy. He's your Sammy, but he's my Sammy too.
It's fine. I'll allow it. I just want to circle back to me getting so upset with the first question. It's just because I love you so much and I don't want you to think of yourself like that.
Oh.
Because you're always, not directionless, Molly.
I've always been treated like that's who I am.
I don't care if you've been treated like that. You're now 40. And I'm not going to allow that to be a part of your life anymore.
Damn. That's the hardest therapy I've had in years.
You're welcome.
I'm going to cry about it later. It's fine. He's definitely going to clip that, son of a bitch.
Malcolm has lived in Belle River for half his life. He took a job working for Ralph right out of high school. Although Malcolm does not agree with the way Ralph runs the Belle Society, including diminishing the literary contributions of BIPOC authors, he continues to be Ralph's snitch. What do you think about Malcolm's character development?
Trope, 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 trope. Let me tell you what. This boy... We've seen the doting grandson a million mm-hmm. times. Mm-hmm. We have seen the reluctant hero who sticks around and hopes for change and blah, blah, blah. It's overdone. Mm-hmm. It's been overdone. Like, and this character was not, he wasn't it. He wasn't it. And also, mm-hmm. I didn't figure out he was a person of color till like, six chapters in? Till we've already gotten to know him?
I don't think so. I think they described him.
I must have missed it. I must have missed it. Because I didn't realize it till the conference. When she started talking about his hair.
She talked about his hair earlier. Him having locks and stuff. I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean he's black. But right. To me, I could not... Did you see Love is Blind season 6? So not the current no, season, but the previous
I'm
one.
I'm super behind on Love is Blind.
So for anybody out there who has seen Love is Blind season 6, I kept picturing Kenneth from season 6. That is the person who, in my opinion, is Malcolm. And that sort of wishy-washy like way of the relationship.
Oh, yeah. I see that. I can see that.
Yeah. That was him.
I can see that.
That was him.
Yeah.
Malcolm's whole excuse of like he's playing the long game that he's going to eventually convince Ralph to include more authors of color, women. That's not good. That's not how this works.
He was in his comfort zone and he didn't want to leave his comfort zone. Mm-hmm. It was just easier to do the day to day and live with grandma and just go to work and mm-hmm. do what he wants in his free time and not think about life and his big picture and the fact that he's toiling his whole life away in this tiny little fucking town that's dedicated to an old white man.
And like, I don't believe, it's possible that I have a question about this later. I don't believe him and Maggie getting back together so quickly that he's just like
negative.
Okay with it.
Negative.
And this book doesn't take place over a long enough period of time for him to be changed by her and decide that it's time to move to DC.
I honestly don't even feel like they were in that serious of a relationship. I honestly, when they were, the only time I remember they were like in a relationship is when the sex stuff came to be. Mm-hmm. Like they didn't act like a couple. They mm-hmm. acted like people that have slept together once or twice.
Well, they never called each other like boyfriend, no! girlfriend.
There's no texting.
Situationship. There was none of that.
There's no like texting or phone calls.
They were colleagues. They were colleagues that were doing a hangout, challenge each other thing, and then they slept together.
No. No. No.
All right. When Maggie loses the main source of revenue for Cobblestone Books, the Richard Bell books, and his writing table, she lies to her best friend, Rochelle. These lies continue throughout the novel as she begins hosting the literary parties. What do you think about this friend dynamic?
She lives with them. This is a small town. You're telling me no one leaked this information?
And beyond that, I'm just going to chime in here and say, how are you marketing this with an online registration and yet no one has linked it back? You know fucking Ralph Bell or at least Malcolm has a Google alert for all the fucking Bell
Society businesses. That's how they found out about that fucking Google review. You know what I mean?
There's no way. This tiny town hosts famous authors.
Nope. Without the famous author posting about it on their Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter. X, whatever the fuck you want to call these social medias. It even on their website. I mean,
it got sent out from one of their newsletters. You're telling me Malcolm is not subscribed to the newsletter of his favorite author?
That's that one. That was a fucking plot hole.
You know what really bothers me about this book? I want to give
her that we can't just ring the bell for an hour long.
I don't think anyone will listen to us next week if we spent this week just ringing a bell for an hour. That's a valid response. What really bothers me about this book is that we can't even use the excuse that this is a new author and she just needs to get her feet wet a little bit more. Right. This is her second book.
Sophomore slump?
She has three books. I don't know. The other ones aren't well reviewed either.
We see this all the time. We see it in historical fiction. We see it in romance. Mm-hmm. Authors get rushed by publishing whatever for their deals. And the quality isn't what you expect it to be because the publisher just wants content.
But the thing is, Molly, that there are a lot of times that we read books that are very trope heavy.
Very much so.
And anytime we read a romance, especially when we're going to do our winter romances in December, we're going to do romance in February. When we do romances that can be very trope heavy and very cliched and predictable plot lines, I always say it doesn't bother me because that's what I came for. I wanted them to give me that. This is not a romance novel. This is, for lack of a better term, women's fiction, but I hate that term. It's fiction.
I fucking hate that term. Why? It's
Because it's written by a woman. Listen, I just want to tell you something real quick as a side note.
Because having a uterus is a sign that you're a lesser author?
Well, speaking of that, the Dewey Decimal System has a lot of issues.
Yeah.
It is a little racist. Not a little. It's racist. It's sexist.
Indeed.
And there wasn't space for all of these things when he created it. He couldn't have predicted all these things, but also because, he's a man.
Couldn't see the future?
Well, why would he ever think women would be scientists? But that brings me to my point. In the Dewey Decimal System, if you have male scientists, history of male scientists, they will be found in the 500 section in the science.
Okay.
Do you know where you'll find the women scientists?
I'm scared to ask.
In the 300s, in social issues. If we're having a book about African-American scientists, they will also be in the 300s under social issues. They will not be housed with the white male scientists.
Congratulations, white men.
Okay. They even won at my profession, which is dominated by white women.
Okay, so
have the confidence of a mediocre white man.
You want to hear something? Okay, I got to go off track for a second.
This book is not that good, so you might as well.
So I hit a Coast Guard anomaly today.
Okay.
We have new neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
He's former officer. She's currently an active officer. We have zero connection.
That's not possible.
We have zero connection.
That's not possible. How is that possible?
He went through my Facebook friends and I went through his Facebook friends. We have zero connection.
Wait, do I have a connection? We'll have to talk about it after.
So no, he didn't know. Then. He didn't know.
He didn't know us either.
No, because they spent most of it up north. D1, Maine.
East Coast North.
Yeah, East Coast North.
You want to hear something, the complete opposite story of what you're just telling me?
Yes,
we
please.
Just had a Coast Guard family transfer in and they're... he's an OS, right? And I'm like, oh, the OS world is so small. I was like, my husband was an OS. So it turns out that he was stationed on the Great Lakes when Tom was at District 9, and he used to call in reports to Tom.
That's so funny.
But they'd never met in person.
So, okay, so we were at the ER in Annapolis for Livy, and they have a kid's ER and a regular ER. And we were waiting for one of the techs to take us back to the kid's ER, and this guy walks up and he goes, you guys waiting for x-rays? And I look at him and he looks at me and we both kind of know each other. And he goes, do I know you? And I go, I don't know. Do I know you? And he goes, military? And I go, former Coast Guard. I was stationed in Baltimore and St. Indigo's. And he goes, St. Indigo's? And I go, yeah. And he goes, what year? And I go to say, 05. And he goes, Molly? And I pull my mask down and he goes, holy shit, Johnson.
Because you were still Johnson then. That's hilarious.
His name is Tommy, and I haven't seen him. He was a reservist non-rate when I met him.
That's so funny.
He's an x-ray tech. Right. He's a doctor in x-ray tech now. I was so proud of him. I hugged That's him awesome. And Liv's like, you okay?
That's awesome. Nobody cares about our Coast Guard stories. Let's move
on. Anyways, moving on.
If anybody even cares about this book, I would be surprised.
Fast forward, guys. It's fine.
All right, Maggie and Malcolm become friends along the journey. It's clear they will become romantic because, of course, they will.
It's written in the stars.
The story is closed door, and it didn't bother me because it matched the tone of the novel. But what did bother me was how Maggie continued to deceive Malcolm, including hiding his favorite author's part, like the party.
That pissed me off.
So, how do you feel about their relationship?
If anyone ever hid Deborah Harkness, Karen Slaughter, Olivia Dade. There is a list. If you
don't be gatekeeping Olivia Dade.
Do not be gatekeeping our favorite authors.
Don't do it. Don't gatekeep authors.
Do it. You know who you are. Anyways, not the point.
They do? Who is gatekeeping authors? Not us.
They know who they are. But what was that fucking question? Oh my god. I got so hyper focused on the fact that we were gatekeeping authors. How Andy Weir, don't keep Andy Weir from me.
Molly, how'd you feel about their relationship?
Oh. It didn't feel like a relationship. It felt like two fuck buddies.
It was like, as the youths say, a situationship.
No.
You don't like that?
No, we're done. We're done with that because, like, they're grown-ups. They're fucking grown-ups. And, like, she even says at one point, you know, if I had a secret that you couldn't tell, I don't know what his fucking name was. Frank? Fred?
Ralph?
Ralph. Fred was the baby in the... Anyways, not important. This is just ADHD, guys, pure and simple.
We should not, you know how like elderly people have sundowners when the sun goes down? Like
the ADHD we should is not, worse as soon as the dark hits.
We should not record after the sun's gone down.
Like she asks him straight up. She goes, if I was hiding something, should I not tell you? And he goes, you know, no, you shouldn't tell me, but I would maybe possibly keep a secret for you. Mm-hmm. And then she didn't tell him shit. If she would have been like, hey, come to So XO's, you know, apartment. There's going to be a thing later. Mm-hmm. He would have shit kittens and just sat there and looked at the Purbell or whatever the cat picture was. Which I want a cat picture with a mustache.
Catterbell. Yeah. Cat Wad Bell. Yeah. Something like, I don't know.
Something like that. But yeah, like I don't know. What do you think?
Did I already answer?
No, I answered first. Somebody's playing with a fucking spotlight outside. God damn. Okay, we need to really finish this book.
I don't believe how quickly they got back together. They reconciled so easily, like, oh, no big deal. They weren't even in a committed relationship.
Because it's not a real relationship.
And they're trying, but then the book ends with them, like, making plans to look at apartments together. They're not going to live together. They're looking at
apartments for each other.
But they're still picking them based on each other's location.
It's dumb.
Like, that's not...
That's not how any of this works.
It's not normal. As the story builds, we learn that Ralph might be hiding a huge and damning secret about Edward Bell. Were you surprised that Edward had an affair and plagiarized his most famous novel?
Now! And I mean now! If we look at history of white, elder, male writers, affairs are a kind of gotta do thing for them. Let's fucking talk about Shakespeare, for example. Let's talk about Shakespeare and Kit Marlowe. Those motherfuckers were stealing from each other constantly. They were constantly sleeping with random women. No, it is so common. Thoughts?
I'm not surprised either. I like the way that you said no. That might be my favorite thing with the sex.
It's okay. But it's a vocal stim from like a movie I heard once upon a time. It's like a no, and I mean no, and now I do it all the time.
Great. Thank you for the explanation.
You're welcome.
I wasn't surprised either. I also wasn't surprised that he essentially blackmailed her, like, I wouldn't want anything to get out, blah, blah, blah. Like, no, I wasn't surprised. It was just too, I mean, the second that we get a character who randomly shows up that, do you know if he had an affair? The second that happened, I was like, oh yeah, this dude be banging other people. I knew it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, but the plagiarizing, I mean, that was a little, it reminded me of, have you seen the movie Big Eyes? It's about an actual faint
painter. Yes, about the fake paintings, yeah.
I was like, fake paintings, yeah.
I was like, do you mean Big Fish? That isn't right, that's not about books.
Big Fish is good, too.
It is.
Big Eyes, that one where her husband was selling her paintings as if they were his. That's what it reminded me of. All right, when Maggie reveals the evidence that Edward was not the author he is thought to be to her friend Vernon, who lives above the bookshop, he advises her to let it go. Of course, she doesn't. And when she reveals the secret, she jeopardizes the entire community, who need the Bell tourists to keep their business running. How do you feel about this climax?
Like, nobody who knew about her secret was like direct. Nobody. He was just like, Vernon's like, don't do that. An old man. He's like, don't do that. Okay, why? Don't do it.
I mean, she knew it would jeopardize the town.
But she doesn't think that it's very apparent from everything Maggie does in this book that she does not think.
But you know what bothered me more than anything?
That she didn't read?
Well, that did. I mean, come on. Like, you cannot have your main character run a bookstore. No. You like, don't do
and
that.
And her best friend's a librarian? You would beat me with the Webster's Dictionary first edition if I told you I wasn't a reader.
I'd probably beat you with something else, but yes. I probably would take, like, Twilight and beat you over the head. You will love this!
As my brain is being concaved in. Take it in one way or another, bitch!
That did not sound appropriate.
Next question!
Take it all, bitch! No, I'm trying to find something that I want to tell you, because I frequently read reviews on Goodreads after I have finished.
Right.
Because I like to write my own review and then go, what do other people think? And one of the things that really bothered me was that I don't think at all it would be an issue if an author was controversial. I think people would still have an interest in it, which is why there was an article that was written about it.
In Glamour.
Yes, they would definitely still come. I thought it was The Guardian.
Oh, no, I thought it was Glamour, but whatever. It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. Glamour doesn't sound right. Glamour was what you were talking about last week, and I feel like you said that because of something else, but I don't, that sounds like it's not smart enough to write the controversial author thing. I don't know. Anyway, so this reviewer, Brenna Sherrill, I want to quote her because, or I want to cite her because she hit the nail on the coffin.
She put the nail in the coffin, burying this book into the ground. I got you. Moving on. Read.
I can't do metaphors when I'm high.
Obviously.
All right. So she hit the nail on the coffin and
Jesus Christ, April.
All right, she said, I don't know.
Just read the damn review.
Okay, I'm not gonna read it. I'm gonna just tell you what she said. The plagiarism, the potential of it being plagiarism would even also be interesting, but the affairs would definitely be intriguing. And she says, I'm going to read this. We are interested in all the parts of them, including the contradictory, gnarly, messy bits that they might not have revealed during their lives. Mm-hmm. As someone who's a little obsessed with Hemingway, I say this with some authority. And I just thought, like, okay, first of all, this person has to be like a lit major or something. Cause like,
if she's the reading words, this and Hemingway, the words
are wording, like it's good. But one of the things that bothered her was she didn't like books. And then also that it would be such a big deal that the author was controversial because it wouldn't be.
It wouldn't be. It would be press.
You know how many people go to Shakespeare's birthplace every day?
Every goddamn day.
I've been there. It was awesome. I saw the bed that he could have potentially been born in.
Cool. Mm-hmm. You've been a lot of places.
Stirrups up. I have. You okay?
Next question?
Sure. I forgot where we were. Oh, here we go. Unsurprisingly, Maggie saves the day, even though she kind of ruined it. And it is revealed that Vernon is the grandson of Edward Bell's mistress, Louise.
Surprise, surprise.
Who is also, Louise is also the author of The First Dollar. Were you surprised by the plot twist?
No. 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 No,
100%.
It's not saving the day.
Called it from the day he was introduced.
If it's not saving the day, if you're fixing a problem of something that you created, if you broke it and then you fixed it, it's not saving the day. You're fixing your damage.
If these are the consequences of your actions, and
literally you're just apologizing, that's all that's going on here. Right, you're making an apology.
Right, and Ralph,
and then she gets a fucking job out of it. She gets a fucking job out of it.
And it turns out,
after all this,
it turns out it's her true passion.
Tourism.
Oh my gosh. She found it. Yeah, I don't get it. I don't get it. I knew that Vernon would turn out to be Edward Bell's mistress's grandson.
It's the tension between him and the man that owns the town. Like,
what I actually thought, and I don't know why I made this assumption, but I kept
everything we've done for your family.
You know nothing about what you've done for my family. I don't know why I kept thinking this, but the whole time I was reading this, I kept picturing Vernon as black.
Or I thought he was mixed. Biracial. Race. Yeah, biracial. Sorry.
Was he?
Sorry, biracial. From what I'm understanding, he is biracial.
Okay, so that's what I was picturing.
So the affair isn't just an affair. It's an affair between a woman of color and a man that was white.
But I don't think that's it, because Edward Bell had a wife, and that wife was Vernon's grandma's cousin. I don't think he was, unless his biological father.
Maggie.
Anyway, I thought that he was black.
We're worrying way too much about this book.
Okay, look, this is what's happening. We are trying to fill the plot holes. Taking shovels and
we're going to fill it.
Tap it in. That's what we're doing.
You know what people do with but I kept picturing that they put trees in them. And the period.
What? How do you put a tree in the middle of the road?
Oh, see, people in Houston were getting pissed of all these potholes. So one neighborhood, this guy was buying mini trees and taking and putting the mini trees and filling the potholes with soil in the trees.
with all that motherfucking effort and money, he could have just filled them himself.
It was the point.
I don't tolerate that, but I don't feel well about that. I'm just going to quote James. I don't feel well about that.
I mean, I don't feel well about it either, James, but it's still hilarious.
But I thought Vernon was biracial and that was going to be an additional twist, but I don't know why I came up with that, but it's not, seem to be the case.
Impression I was given based off this book.
Yes, because Maggie is biracial.
And that is the impression they are giving throughout this novel, that everybody is somehow a POC.
It's either they're BIPOC or they're a woman who's maybe like fluid or somehow queer. The only people
trope.
All the bad people were white men and uppity white women.
It's just, come on. Like the chick they throw in the bookstore to help her.
Yeah, white woman. Yeah, exactly. All right. Kind of a primary theme of this book is that calling something a classic book doesn't necessarily make it the best. There is a lot of talk about how canonical authors tend to be white men. I wanted to talk about this for a minute because looking back at our episodes list, and I went through all of our previous episodes list. In seven seasons, we have only had 9 episodes that featured BIPOC authors, and only one of those BIPOC authors was male. So it was almost all white women. And I don't even know if you can really say 9 because 2 of them were Nikki. Mm. And so how do you feel about this being a central theme in this novel? And like, how do those stats of our own reading habits feel?
Look, I'm not going to explain away our behaviors because we just go what we see, and I'm not going to like make excuses for us. We could be better for sure. Yeah. We could be better for sure. But we're going based off the market. Mm-hmm. What is advertised to us, what we see in stores, what we're seeing online, what we're seeing on library shelves, what we're seeing when we're perusing social media. It is not that we are actively avoiding them. It is we are not getting access.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It does. And that's actually a part of what I love about being a librarian, and particularly a children's librarian. And honestly, I think about this more in children's books than I do in adult books. Mm-hmm. And that's on me for doing that. But disproportionately, picture books feature more characters that are not human than they do humans. Hmm. Like, there are more books about trucks than there are, like, black boys. I don't doubt that. But,
I bet there's more train books than anything else. Look at the autism rate.
So there's a huge disproportionate thing in picture books. But the picture books that do feature actual human characters, the majority of those are white boys. And the industry is getting better about releasing books that feature authors of or characters of color and characters with disabilities and, you know, girls that like dinosaurs, not just princesses, or maybe they like both. But most of the time, what I'm seeing, unless that book is written
by a BIPOC author,
the character that is the other character is always on the side. Like, I ordered a picture book a year ago for my previous library, and I was really excited because it's about a school, and I mean, it was very diverse. I mean, there was a girl that was using a wheelchair, and I was just like, cool. Wow, this is gonna be great. It's gonna be so inclusive. No, the main character was a white boy, and it was through his lens. He wasn't learning to get along with kids or any of that.
Here's the frustrating thing about those kind of things. I'm going to speak for me as a white woman writer. Mm-hmm. I don't always feel it is my place to tell BIPOC stories.
Right. We had a great conversation about that with Nikki.
Yes.
Nikki Payne was talking about how And she's an anthropologist, so I feel like she would really enjoy this discussion that we're having right now. But
we miss you, Nikki. Come on anytime.
Yeah. Her Instagram just said she was working on 6 books and thinking about releasing 2 coming up. So
yeah, I know. She can shut up.
We got to get her on. But so
she's shut up about all this writing she's doing. Rude ass.
One of the things that she's told us was that even though she was writing a bit about a Black woman, that Black woman has a different experience of life, especially because of, where were they? Maine?
Maine. Yeah, she went to Maine. Nikki does the research. This is why she's such a great author. She immerses really herself.
But
that's the anthropologist in her.
But she said even then she felt weird about telling that story because that's not her story. Mm-hmm. One of the things I want to do, I want to be more conscientious when we're picking books in the future, that we are being more inclusive, because there is a whole rainbow of people, we love Nikki, but she's not the only Black author, but, you know, she did talk about BIPOC authors last year. It was a big thing on her social media, so... Mm-hmm. I like to be a little bit more conscientious about it.
Same.
Also, I do feel like we need some more male authors in general.
I try, man.
I know. If it's not Andy Weir, we don't like it.
I mean, I brought us Anthony Mara.
All right. The final thing I want to talk about is what actually made me want to read this book. And like our overall feelings on this novel. So this book was in the bookshop. It was in the bookstore, the banned bookshop of Maggie Banks. Okay.
It's cute.
I was looking around. I was just looking at the shelves and trying to find books based on cover.
Yeah.
That is a cute, it is cute book.
It is cute.
And I love the title, The Banned Bookshop of Maggie Banks. I love promoting reading banned books.
Mm-hmm.
Every Banned Books Week, every year, you know this because you're my personal friend on the Facey book.
What? No.
I know. So you know that every Banned Books Week, I release statistics, and I talk a lot about banned books, and I'm really passionate about it. I thought this was going to be a story of somebody who was selling banned books.
That's what I thought. This was a story like a bookstore built to sell books that were old. No.
Mm-hmm.
No. You need to watch your titling, ma'am.
The controversy of the books she was selling was that she couldn't sell anything modern. And so she was selling them out of a paper box.
And I get it. It's a metaphor for book banning.
It's not banned books. They're not banned books, though. These are books that... I get the
metaphor. It's just exhausting and a long road and unnecessary.
Mm-mm. I don't like it. And also, it wasn't her bookshop.
I don't like it.
I don't feel well about it.
I don't like it. I don't feel well. That's our new catchphrase this season. I don't feel well about this.
And it's not her bookshop. It's not her bookshop. She doesn't even like books. And yet she's running a bookshop. Like, why her best friend thought that was a good idea is beyond me.
I love you.
But if I need someone to cover the library. No, you could cover the library. I can't think of an example.
I'm great with people.
I can't think of an example of something that, like, I would not put you in the role of.
You know, Hillary sent me something the other day, and it's this meme, and it goes, we all need the friend that's going to give us great sound advice, but we also need the friend that's going to give us margaritas till we're blasted drunk. And she goes, how are you both of them?
That's true.
And I go, I don't know, man. I'm good at multitasking.
Mm-hmm.
But this is not multitasking. Mm-hmm. This is just poor writing. And I don't like saying that. I don't.
It's not well written at all.
Did the book entertain me? Yes. Did I find a few
moments? It kept me reading. Like, it wasn't just that I needed to finish it. I finished it a few days earlier than I thought I would.
Yeah. I really want to be invited to a retelling.
Mm-hmm.
I really want to be invited as an author.
I was actually thinking that'd be a great library program.
Wouldn't it? I'll be your first author, I promise.
My first author that I will be hosting in my library is Emma Berry.
Huh? Emma?
Emma Berry.
Nice. She would be excellent at that too.
I'm going to tell you more about that off pod because I don't want people to know where I live.
But Emma, would be excellent at that.
She would. I think that Nikki would be really good at that too, because that's what Nikki does. Nikki does these genre bending. Yeah. I don't have anything else. Frankly, I don't want to talk about this book anymore. Are we good? Either.
You want to talk about next week?
Yeah. So next week we are going to be talking about this book, The Medicine Woman of Galveston by Amanda Skinnendoor. And
that is, she sent that on.
And Amanda Skinnendoor will be on the episode.
Right.
She'll be on our pod.
And we're back to normal schedule. So I'm hosting, gang.
Yeah. I don't even know if they notice when we mess up our schedule, but yeah, we're going to be chatting with her and talking about her book. And this is not her first book. This is her newest book, The Medicine Woman of Galveston. She has several books. She's a historical fiction writer. And yeah, we'll talk to her next week. And I mean, we still have two more authors, an author duo. I don't know why I did it like that. It's like flicking you off in British.
It's turn two. We have an author. Turn two. Move your ass. Get your shit done.
We're going to have a writing duo in December and potentially
a secret
guest. I have to email her this weekend.
A secret guest.
We could potentially have another guest. I'm sending an email to this weekend and I will bring them. All right. I'm done. You good?
Me too.
All right. We'll see you guys next week.
Bye, guys.
Bye. Thank you for joining us on Book Besties. Don't forget to like and subscribe. The views discussed here are those of April and Molly, not those of anyone else. Today's book was The Banned Bookshop of Maggie Banks by Shauna Robinson. Your Book Besties are Molly Biggs and April Watkins, editing by Thomas Watkins, and music is Sleep Sweetly by Pritchett Up. Don't forget to follow the Book Besties on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. If you'd like to contact the Book Besties, please email us at bookbestiespod@gmail.com. or visit our website, bookbestiespodcast.com. Until next time, besties, get lost in your favorite book.